is the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. It's Earth Day, April 22nd here. And to celebrate Earth Day, Senator Sanders and Congressman Ellison have introduced a piece of legislation into the Senate and House, respectively, titled the End Polluter Welfare Act. All right. Now, at the same time, Republicans in the House are trying to reauthorize the USA Patriot Act, only they've renamed it the USA Freedom Act or something like that. It's like, you know, at the same time, Republicans are working really hard to shovel more of our tax dollars into the giant privatized for-profit machine of the intelligence arm of the defense industry, because that's really what that's all about. There are now hundreds of millions, maybe no doubt billions, maybe tens of billions, certainly tens of billions, maybe hundreds of billions of dollars at stake in reauthorizing the Patriot Act, because you've got all these private contractors. This is why Republicans always privatize everything, so that the private contractors can make a buck and they can kick some of that money back to the Republican members of Congress. So, you know, at the same time that the Republicans are doing that, Senator Sanders and Keith Ellison are standing up for a planet that doesn't kick back money to politicians. It simply sustains all of our lives. Something that Republicans seem to not get. Right? I mean, really, really not get. For example, Gallup just came out with a poll. This was done of a 5-year study. The only people in America who, in a majority, believe that global warming is not going to happen in our lifetimes, will not affect future generations, and will never happen. The only group who believes those things, well, it's not a majority of them, but it's, you know, the largest number who believe those things are conservative Republicans. Oh, actually, it is a majority. Only 37% of conservative Republicans say that global warming will happen in our lifetime. A majority of them say, nah, not a chance. Only 19% of conservative Republicans say global warming will affect future generations. And 40%, fully 40% of conservative Republicans say global warming will never happen. It's only 3% of liberal Democrats who say that. And, you know, in the middle of the political spectrum, conservative slash moderate Democrats, only 5% say that. But 40% of Republicans. Why? Because they've been watching and listening to the shills over at Fox so-called News, on right-wing hate radio, on the right-wing websites that are all taking their information from the shills for the fossil fuel industry that owns a good chunk of the Republican Party. And in fact, it's the billionaires in the fossil fuel industry, specifically the Koch brothers, and no doubt many of their friends, who are preparing to fund Republicans to the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars in the upcoming election. And they're going to continue keeping their suckers as suckers. Hey, keep voting for the Republicans. There's no global warming. Everything's fine. Don't worry about what those oil, you know, the fossil fuels and all this. Just let them make their money. You know, the Koch brothers, they need another $10 or $20 billion. Then maybe they could buy every politician in America rather than just, you know, the president and half of Congress. And in the midst of this, of course, TPP is rolling along. Senator Sanders, once again, yesterday or this morning, Shano, the committee. Well, Senator Sanders recently, he's on the Finance Committee, and the Fast Track Authority bill, they call it TPA. This is the legislation that says for the next 6 years, that is 2 years of President Obama, 4 years of the next presidential candidate. For the next 6 years, basically, any president can negotiate any deal they want with anybody. And if they call it a trade deal, it has to get an up or down vote in Congress, and it doesn't, and Congress doesn't get to debate it or amend it. I mean, that's how bizarre it is. As David Corton writes in Yes Magazine, He's talking about this March 25th WikiLeaks release. We have seen at least one part of the confidential draft of SHAFTA, the Southern Hemisphere Asian Free Trade Agreement, also known as the Trans-Pacific Partnership, or TPP. And David Corton writes in Yes Magazine, a quick reading of the leaked chapter makes it clear why TPP sponsors have gone to great lengths to keep their negotiations secret. The document substantiates claims by opponents that the TPP is a corporate rights agreement designed to facilitate the export of U.S. jobs, allow corporations to sue governments for enacting labor and environmental protections, and make it illegal for governments to favor local businesses and advance the colonization of national economies by global corporations and financiers. Local, by local laws are going to be banned? Yes. We signed TPP, arguably the Buy American Act of 1935, which is still on the books, will be declared illegal. We will have to dismantle some of our own laws, including the one that says that if the federal government is buying things, they have to try to source them from American manufacturers first, unless the president issues a waiver, which, you know, started with the Reagan administration. Reagan started, you know, just rubber stamping those waivers so fast and so furious that every single waiver was another factory going over to China. And it's been going on ever since. And what happens if you try to find out what's going on? Well, Courthouse News was curious about a secret tribunal hearing. We have this deal called the U.S.-Ecuador Bilateral Investment Treaty. It's another one of these these so-called free trade deals. And there is a hearing going on right now. Chevron apparently is suing Ecuador. Yes, corporations can sue countries under these things. And Martin Doe, the senior legal counsel for the court, this court is in the Netherlands. It's the Permanent Court of Arbitration, the PCA. 3-week hearing. Courthouse News said, we'd like to send a reporter. They said, and I quote, in the circumstances, there can be no public access to the hearing. Now, we had no public access to the rulemaking, and then once the rules are in place, once the law takes effect, you got no public access to that either. And this is all part of this insane rush to privatize, as I mentioned earlier, you know, and TPP will be a piece of that. It'll make it much easier to privatize government functions by having corporations say, hey, wait a minute, you're building roads? We could be building those roads for a profit. We're going to sue you for the lost profits because you're doing things for yourself. And then privatization goes on steroids. You saw this woman who live tweeted her son's sex ed class. Remember that? This was just a couple days ago, and it was in East Lansing, Michigan. It was insane what they were, you know, condoms leak, et cetera, et cetera. Telling boys, look for girls who say no to sex because they're going to be the good girls, right? And all this kind of stuff. Anyhow, in the article in the State Journal, says he's particularly concerned. This is State Senator Curtis Hertel Jr. He's particularly concerned about the group hired to provide the abstinence presentation that Dreger attended, called Sexually Mature, Aware, Responsible Teens, or SMART. Because it has ties to an anti-abortion group. SMART is connected to the Pregnancy Services of Greater Lansing, a right-wing crisis pregnancy center that attempts to dissuade pregnant women from choosing an abortion. Oh, geez. So they outsourced sex ed. And instead of outsourcing it for money, they outsourced it for suckers, right? This is the Republicans in Michigan doing this. And we got to bring suckers in to vote for Republicans. So, hey, you know, we're going to outsource to the right-wing churches so they'll continue to vote Republican and bring them into our schools to fill our kids' heads with nonsense.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And that doesn't even begin to get to what's going on in Maine, where the Mitt Romney kind of companies are just walking all over the people there. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, and George watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV in Buford, South Carolina. Hey, George, what's on your mind today?
Tom, you know, for years, basically I have heard things about Ronald Reagan, and I notice you frequently make reference to Ronald Reagan.
Right.
The late actor James Garner said before he was elected president that it would be an awful idea to make him president, because when he was with the Screen Actors Guild, they used to sit him in the corner, and when they needed something said, they would take him out and let him give a talk and put him back.
Right. Well, now, and he was also, he was, as the president of the Screen Actors Guild, he was supplying information, I believe, both to the FBI, to J. Edgar Hoover, and also to Joe McCarthy's committee, the House Un-American Activities Committee. So basically, he was a snitch on commies in Hollywood.
Well, my question is, why hasn't there been more revealed in that vein about Ronald Reagan?
Well, I think there's nobody's trying to hide that. I mean, that's in most biographies, even the biographies that are fawning of him. Is that, you know, that he
okay.
was doing that.
Well,
I don't think it's a secret.
Did he have Alzheimer's while in office?
Well, that's a good question. And it's something that is debated among scholars. He was shot by John Hinckley in which year of his presidency? 1981? Wow.
I believe so.
Yeah, very early. I mean, sometimes if you are beginning dementia, if you're on the early stages of dementia, something like the anesthesia associated with surgery can be enough of a shock that it can just push you over the edge. And so, you know, it's not inconceivable that his dementia started getting serious, at, you know, even in 81. There are, I've heard, and this is all... I can't substantiate this. So this is all basically, you know, what people have said, what they, you know, comments that have been made. I've read it in several books, that by the last 2 years of his presidency, he was in pretty bad shape. The George Bush was basically running the country. And a friend of mine was involved in the Iran-Contra deposition where they interrogated Reagan, and I think it was 168 times or 153 to over 100 times anyway. He said, "I don't remember." And he genuinely, and apparently that was not a strategy to avoid culpability or avoid prosecution, although, you know, it's always a good strategy when politicians do that to avoid prosecution, to say, "I don't remember," because it's the one way that you can lie without being called a liar. But he probably actually didn't remember, because he probably was in the early stages of, you know, full-blown Alzheimer's. But who knows? Who knows?
You know, that was, I believe it was Nixon that said while he was speaking, "Hurry it up."
Oh, really? Said that about Reagan? "Hurry it up." Interesting. George, thanks for the call. Yeah, I think the best biography of Reagan was written by Will Bunch. It's called "Tear Down This Myth." So, you know, if you're looking for a good book on Reagan, and it's been a while since I read it, and I just don't remember the details on that question. We'll be right back. Yeah, Maine. What a day. I mean, it's like, this is a time in the history of this country when it's really important for us to know what the hell is going on. And our media is focused on things that are really not consequential. And, you know, all the Sturm und Drang around all the, but it's really, at the end of the day, when you're talking Republican politics, you're talking money. Now, you may say, but, you know, what about, you know, they want to ban abortion. I mean, you know, what about that? Well, yeah, that's about money, too. Well, how's banning abortion about money? Well, it's about money in two ways. Number one, it's an enormously successful fundraiser. Anti-abortion groups and Republican and Democratic, for that matter, anti-abortion candidates have raised millions, probably hundreds of millions of dollars over the years. Maybe even billions of dollars over the years, specifically on anti-abortion measures or messages, rather. But secondly, it's money because it brings in the suckers. It brings in the people who only think, who think that that's what that particular Republican Party or that Republican representative is all about, is, oh, he's all about abortion. He's my man. Because abortion, I care about that. And what they don't realize is that, you know, yeah, he wants you to vote for him. And he will do, you know, a little bit. But they're never going to totally ban abortion in the United States. If they did, they'd lose, you know, millions of dollars in fundraising. They would lose so much. So they give lip service to the suckers. And they tell the suckers, hey, you know, we're on your side. Don't worry. Ever since 1973, which is a hell of a long time ago, the Republican Party has been saying to the suckers, well, don't worry, we'll reverse the Supreme Court's, you know, decriminalization of abortion. So anyhow, the welfare program, you know, in Maine, Paula Page, crazy Paula Page, the right-wing Republican governor, has, you know, tried drug testing welfare recipients and floated the idea of drug testing people on unemployment, all sorts of weird things. I mean, he's like a Fox News head, a talking head almost. And he's got a weird obsession with Vaseline. But in any case, the state of Maine decided, hey, you know, we need business in Maine. So let's give corporations some free money and they'll bring their business here. Right. All over the country. This is another, you know, brilliant idea that came out of the Reagan era. The Chicago school boys, Milton Friedman and company, saying, well, if you want a business to come to your community, what you really need to do is give them a $20 million tax break and they will show up, or $30 or $40 million. And they'll show up and they'll come to your community and they'll keep the jobs there and everything will be wonderful. Just give the money to the corporations. They know what to do with it. In point of fact, if you look at where corporations are relocating themselves around this country right now, generally speaking, now there are some low-wage companies that are relocating into low-wage areas, but you know who are choosing Texas rather than Mexico. But setting that aside, most companies, you know, the biggest consideration is, are there good schools around here so that I can get good employees? Is there good infrastructure? Is there a public transit system so I can get good employees? And if it's a retail business, so my customers can get to me. So really, if you're the governor of a state, if you're Paula Page and you want your state to grow, revive your infrastructure. Put in high-speed rail. Help put in high-speed rail from Boston to Portland, Maine, for example. You want to see things really pop? Start putting high-speed internet in cities all over the state. But instead, they said, "Oh, well, we'll give money to the corporations, and that will work." And as this article, and CentralMaine.com, I think this is the Bangor Daily News. Actually, I think this is their website. It's by Whit Richardson and Kevin Miller. Oh, it's with the Portland Press Herald. My apologies. The Portland Press Herald. They write, this program to give money to corporations to bring their businesses to Maine, the program was tapped by Kate Street Capital, a New Hampshire private equity firm, oh, geez, a Mitt Romney company, type of company, to direct $40 million to Great Northern Paper, a foundering paper mill that Kate Street Capital owned in East Millinocket, Maine. So they already own a paper mill in Maine, and it is foundering. It's falling apart. But of the $40 million, $32 million took the form of one-day loans. $7 million was used to pay down high-interest debt, and the rest went to broker's fees. None of the money was used to modernize the mill, as described in the initial application of the program, yet taxpayers will pay $16 million to the investors. And, to add insult to injury, the mill closed and filed for bankruptcy last year, keeping Mainers $40 million. Well, not the mill, the executives and the stockholders, the ownership class, the billionaire class, they kept the $40 million. You and me? No. Well, if you live in Maine anyway, you and me in Maine, the Mainers? No. What'd they get? Nothing. They got a $40 million bill on their taxes. Everybody in Maine kicked in a little bit of money. It's nuts. I've got a bunch of information on NAFTA to share with you, and we'll pick up your calls after the break, after the news here at the bottom of the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
Oh, and Zed Jelani's got this great piece, what he refers to as the Republican candidate's dumbest move yet. I'll share that with you, too, as we continue through the day. The bad and the very, very motlessly ugly. The good. John Delgado, the Baton Rouge, Louisiana city councilman, has called out his fellow Republican state representative Mike Johnson for supporting a so-called religious liberty bill that has come under fire from the business community for allowing discrimination against same-sex couples. Johnson, Delgado said, referring to his fellow Republican, is a despicable bigot of the highest order. Bigotry is bad for business, and it's only common sense that businesses would recognize that and call this bill what it is. Well said, Councilman. It's good to see that some Republicans are calling these so-called religious bills out for what they really are, shameless attempts to justify and codify homophobia and bigotry. The bad. Alan West. During an appearance before a local conservative group in Texas last week, the former Florida congressman defended school prayer by claiming that it prevents people from getting hurt on the football field. Seriously, take a look.
In high school, before every game, at Grady Stadium, a pastor would come down and pray over that football game. I don't remember catastrophic injuries. I don't remember anyone getting carted off that field paralyzed. See, there's something about the power of prayer. There's something about that freedom of religion. There's something about the founding fathers who prayed over this nation. And they pledged their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor.
Compelling theory you've got there, Congressman. On the other hand, it's possible you were hit in the head so many times. That's why you can't remember it. Anyhow, something tells me that prayer isn't going to do much when a 350-pound linebacker slams you to the ground. And the very, very ugly Michelle Bachmann. During a radio interview this weekend, the former Minnesota congresswoman claimed that the end times were upon us. Why? Well, Obama, of course. Take a listen.
We need to realize how close this clock is to getting toward the midnight hour. And I think that's why, for our sake, for the sake of our family, for our nation, for the next generations, we need to cry out to a holy God. Mm-hmm. This is coming faster than anyone can see. We are literally watching month by month the speed move up to a level we've never seen before with these events. Barack Obama is intent. It is his number one goal to ensure that Iran has a nuclear weapon.
Right. Actually, no. It's his number one goal to ensure that they don't have a nuclear weapon. That's the whole point. Can you imagine this woman as president? Can you imagine the Republicans actually proposing that she be president? The ex-congresswoman, who is now an ex-congresswoman because, you know, she was facing, apparently, criminal charges for the way that her campaign was handling its money. Anyhow, it's all very, very ugly. Amazing. Okay, Mitch McConnell just announced this from Sean Taylor, our executive producer and all-around genius. Mitch McConnell just announced that he will adjourn the entire Senate to allow the fast-track markup to proceed later today. Hatch has said that the Orrin Hatch, who's the guy, Orrin Hatch and Ron Wyden are the sponsors of this thing. And Hatch has said that the Senate markup will resume at 4 p.m. This is what Lori Wallach said to Sean. Quote, the GOP Senate leadership is so committed to fast-tracking fast-track, so scared that the public is going to find out about how fast-tracking TPP will make it easier to offshore their jobs, that they are adjourning and shutting down the entire Senate floor, so no business on the Senate floor of any kind, in order to ensure that the committee moves ahead with fast-tracking fast-track. Stopping TPP is a noble mission, venture, but stopping TPP means not letting fast-track happen. Fast-track is, they're calling it TPA, Trade Promotion Authority. Basically, what Fast Track does is it says that for the next 6 years, The president can bring legislation before Congress that involves business with other countries, which, by the way, according to the Constitution, is called a treaty. Presidents negotiate treaties and two-thirds of the Senate approve them. This is absolutely a treaty. I mean, according to the Constitution, treaties supersede U.S. law. The TPP, the SHAFTA, will supersede U.S. law the same way NAFTA did, the same way the WTO did, the same way the Central American Free Trade Deal does. And you look at the just an insane amount of damage that has been done by all of these deals to the United States, to Americans, to American workers. It's mind-boggling. I mean, just look at what happened as a consequence of NAFTA. This is from a Public Citizen. Rather than creating the promised hundreds of thousands of jobs, remember both Bill Clinton and George Herbert Walker Bush were saying, hey, you know, let us pass NAFTA, and it'll produce hundreds of thousands of jobs. Well, NAFTA has contributed to the enormous new U.S. trade deficit with Mexico and Canada, which has already equated to a net loss of at least 1 million U.S. jobs, and that was back in 2004. The Economic Policy Institute calculates that the ballooning trade deficit with Mexico alone destroyed about 700,000 net U.S. jobs between NAFTA's implementation in 2010. More than 845,000. Now, one of the provisions of NAFTA is if you lose your job because of this trade agreement, the federal government will give you some money to qualify, you know, so that you can train yourself for a job that's still here that hasn't been offshored. More than 845,000 U.S. workers have been certified for trade adjustment assistance. In other words, who knows how many millions applied, but 845,000 Americans have said, I lost my job because of NAFTA. I got screwed because of NAFTA. Give me some money. And the federal government has given them some money. Now, not a lot, not enough, and it certainly hasn't given them a job. And they had to have lost their jobs, quote, due to imports from Canada and Mexico or the relocation of factories to those countries. This is just NAFTA. Almost 900,000 Americans were, according to our government, certified to have lost their job, which pushes down wages in the United States because it loosens up the job market. According to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, 2 out of every 3 displaced manufacturing workers who were rehired in 2012, people who lost the good factory jobs in America, as over 60,000 factories just in the last 10 years have gone overseas. 2 out of every 3 displaced manufacturing workers who were rehired in 2012 were rehired at a lower pay. Most of them taking a pay cut greater than 20%. The inflation-adjusted U.S. trade surplus with Mexico of $2.5 billion and the $29 billion deficit with Canada the year before NAFTA have turned into a combined NAFTA trade deficit on our part. We're the ones who got screwed on this entirely to the tune of $177 billion. That's our trade deficit now with the NAFTA countries, whereas we used to have a trade surplus with Mexico. Now we have a deficit, which means that, you know, Carlos Slim can come to the United States and buy phone companies here, too. In fact, after NAFTA took effect, U.S. manufacturing and service exports to both Mexico and Canada actually slowed down. They didn't speed up. And you say, but, you know, hey, now we get cheap stuff, right? We get cheap stuff from Mexico. Isn't that great? Well, no. The reductions in consumer good prices that have materialized have not been sufficient to offset the loss of middle-class wages under NAFTA. Sorry, you don't make as much. You can buy cheap stuff, but you don't make enough money to really buy the same amount of cheap stuff that you used to buy when it was expensive stuff, but you made more money. In addition to that, these corporations, and this is just NAFTA, these corporations in Canada and Mexico have been suing the United States over and over and over again, the Dolphin Safe Tuna one you probably heard me rant about a whole bunch of times, and saying, hey, you know, under these state investor agreements, if your government's rules cost our corporation money, you have to pay us the money we lost. Or if your government's rules prevent us from doing business the way that we want to do business, you have to repay us for the profits we would have made. We don't even have to do business. We just have to say, hey, we got a great business plan here, but it doesn't work because of your rules. Give us money. Seriously. And here's what's happened under NAFTA. More than $360 million in compensation to investors has been extracted from NAFTA governments by investor state tribunal challenges against toxic bans. Oh, the United States bans toxic products? Oh, you can't do that. Sorry, we're going to sue you. You've got to take our poison. You got to take our pesticide-covered food, for example. Land use rules? Oh, in the United States, you've got to do agriculture in a rational fashion or whatever. You know, we're going to sue you over that. Water and forestry policies? More than $12.5 billion are currently pending in these kind of claims right now. We're being sued to the tune of $12.5 billion. This is like the patent trolls. It's like a new business opportunity for businesses. Let's just go sue the United States. We don't even have to do business to make money. The export of subsidized U.S. corn under NAFTA's first decade destroyed the livelihoods of more than 1 million Mexican campesino farmers and 1.4 additional Mexican workers whose livelihoods depended on Mexican agriculture. At desperate migration pushed down wages in the Maquiladora factory zone and contributed to the doubling of Mexican immigration into the United States following NAFTA's implementation. Real wages in Mexico. You know, you think, hey, we got screwed here in the United States. Did Mexico get screwed too? Well, the corporations, no. They made out like bandits. Of course, they always do. But workers, real wages in Mexico have fallen below pre-NAFTA levels. Amazing. Amazing.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
In fact, if you work in Mexico at the minimum wage, right now you can buy 38% less stuff than you could have bought before the day the NAFTA came in based on your income. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you and Steve in Rochester, New York. Hey, Steve, what's on your mind? Thanks for watching Free Speech TV on Dish Network. Steve? Sounds like he's there. Maybe he's not. Okay, Steve, you're gonna have to call back. You gotta listen to your phone because there's about a 40-second delay on the TV machine here. Daniel in Arcadia, Florida. Hey, Daniel, what's up? Thanks for watching Free Speech TV.
Hey, Tom, I love everything you do, and I agree with everything you say. You know, I think the Democrats, because Reagan introduced big money back into politics, has said, "Oh, let's do what William Harding did." Let all the billionaires run everything.
Right.
And, I just think that Bill Clinton and Barack Obama and all of them are doing it seems like they make lemonade out of lemons when the Republicans seem to think Reagan was some kind of god.
Yeah.
I don't understand people. I lived during Reagan. I could not find a job. I had many skills, Tom. I was a plumber. I owned tree services for him during Jimmy Carter.
Yeah.
All kinds of stuff. I could not find a job when he came.
Oh, well, Reagan brought the highest unemployment level and the worst recession since the Great Depression. It happened right after his massive tax cut for billionaires.
I understand that, but Tom, you went way beyond that. He was in bed with the CIA. Oh, you know what? Here's what I want to know. He claimed to be a Christian within debates with Jimmy Carter. I looked it up on Google, and when John Kennedy was going to get elected, Ronald Reagan did not like John Kennedy for some reason. Right. And he went to Gene Dixon. Now, he was playing around with black magic and nonsense. And then he comes in. And he was never no Christian. He never went to day in church.
Remember the conspiracy theories back when, Hal Lindsey had published his book, The Late Great Planet Earth, back in the late 70s, and, you know, which talked about the rapture and the end of time and all this kind of stuff, and did a pretty good job of convincing job for the gullible anyway, that, you know, the last days were here. And in that book, he talked about how the last times would be brought about by somebody whose name was 666 and by this relationship between the beast and the whore. These are the words from Revelation. And Ronald Reagan's name has six letters in each one of his three names. R-O-N-A-L-D, six letters Wilson, W-I-L-S-O-N, six letters Reagan, six letters. So Reagan, you know, and Revelation says, and the name of the beast is six and six and six. And that was Reagan. And then you know, Reagan was negotiating with Gorbachev, and it says that the other one will have a mark of the beast on his forehead. And Gorbachev had that birthmark. And, you know, Reagan's address, his home address for the Western White House was originally 666 when he and Nancy bought the house. And they got the town to change it. I've read that in a whole bunch of places. I don't know. Maybe it's been debunked by Snopes by now. But there was all these weird conspiracy theories when he was president that I found just fascinating. I thought it was, thank you, Daniel, for the call. Because, yeah, Reagan didn't go to church. And other than ceremonially, and there were people forget all this stuff, you know, all the stuff that happened during the rain. Anyhow, we'll be right back. It's 10 minutes before the hour. Welcome back, Tom Harbin here with you, and Donald in Oak Park, Illinois. Hey, Donald, thanks for listening to WCPT. What's on your mind?
Yes, Tom. Hello.
Hey, what's up?
Yes, I have a question, and I hope you could tell me that I'm wrong of what I'm the way I'm thinking of it. The way you describe this TTP, with the 6 years and everything, and President Obama when he was on the TV with
Chris Matthews,
right. He made it sound like that he would never ever do anything that would hurt the American people or hurt our economy.
Right.
But from what you're describing, there is no way. I can't understand why he would even, knowing the man he was and what he stood for, why he would even go forward with this, except for one other reason, that he is so disgusted with the Democratic voters and the Democratic politicians and the very few that stood behind him. All the stuff and all the accomplishments that he did never got any credit. And the only place I ever heard him getting credit was from the people that are on progressive radio stations.
Yeah.
I think he's just saying, and probably Michelle is behind it too, and saying, you know something? You ought to just tell them to just go to hell and just tell them, say, listen, you wanted the Republican Party? Here it is on a silver platter.
Yeah.
And
Donald, I'm not buying it. I honestly don't know what's going through the president's mind. I have no idea. I am so baffled by this. It seems on its face just common sense that this would be a terrible thing to do, at least from the point of view of the American middle class. It would be a great thing to do from the point of view of the billionaire class. And the only two explanations that come to my mind, and maybe, I don't know, maybe you, Donald, or another one of our listeners, can come up with an alternative, is either A, President Obama has been badly advised, both politically and with regard to trade policy, that somebody who just, you know, doesn't have a good fundamental understanding of how trade works is advising him and he's believing this, and that they may be misinformed or they may be malinformed. They may be advising him because they figure once this thing is passed, they'll get a million-dollar-a-year job with some multinational corporation or whatever. That's one possibility. That's Obama as the rube, you know, as the guy, as the sucker. The other possibility is that requires President Obama to actually believe what he's saying, which I believe is the case. I mean, he may be an incredibly convincing liar, but it looked to me like he actually believed what he was saying when he was talking to Chris Matthews. The other possibility is that he doesn't believe what he's saying and that he does know what this trade deal will do, but the upside somehow for him or for his party will be better. And they're looking at the possibility that these big corporations will fund the Democratic Party, or that, he too can, like Bill Clinton, become worth over $100 million if all he does is go out and give speeches to Shafta countries. You know, I don't know. Gary, I am just totally baffled by this, but I do not for a minute believe that Obama's doing it because he hates America or because he's PO'd that he's been politically treated badly. There are so many other things he could do. I just can't even imagine that's how he thinks. I just don't. Donald, thanks for the call. Gary in Minneapolis. Hey, Gary.
Oh, Tom, before I say what I was going to say, it's so good you talk about global warming. That's what I called about. And I think the global economy increases so much the burning of fossil fuels that adds to it and the huge increase in human numbers. But what I called about also was that, you know, Kennedy, he had a couple of eggheads in his cabinet. First of all, Adlai Stevenson was his idea of the blockade to avoid nuclear war. But Stuart Udall, back then, those many years ago, you know, global warming was the biggest threat to all life as we know it.
Right. And Udall was, you're talking about when Udall was senator or when he was Secretary of the Interior?
When he was in the cabinet, Secretary of Interior.
Right. Okay.
And anyways, I've felt for many years it's the biggest threat to all life. We should just tell the deniers, you know, if you don't believe in science, then you shouldn't take advantage of our modern technologies or modern medicine or anything. What do you think?
Right. Yeah. If you don't believe in science, stop going to doctors. We'll find you a witch doctor.
Yeah.
You know, or something like that.
Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah. Or, you know, go sign up with, Scientology or something. Gary, thank you for the call. Hack in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Hey, Hack, what's on your mind? Thanks for listening to SiriusXM.
Yeah, Tom, anytime you want to quote a Republican, make absolutely sure you get it on in writing, in hard copy. The word pray.
Right.
Is it P-R-A-Y or P-R-E-Y?
Republicans are preying on us.
beyond a doubt. And there's another possibility as far as the president being in favor of this, and it's a long shot, reverse psychology.
Oh, he thinks if he's in favor of it, the Republicans will be opposed to it, and they'll shoot it down because he secretly doesn't want it to happen.
Yeah, he could end it once and for all if he'd endorse breathing.
Yeah, you're right. If the president came out and said, the most patriotic thing you can do is breathe every other breath, you know, it's a... We all have to breathe, and the Republicans would go, no, we're going to hold our breath until we all turn purple or something. Amazing. Thank you for the call. Michael in Silver Spring, Maryland. Hey, Michael, what's up?
Hey, he was talking a little bit about abortion.
Yeah.
And you might want to write this down for those Bible thumpers and talking about how God is anti-abortion, which isn't true.
God commits a bunch of abortions in the Bible.
Yeah, in Numbers chapter 5, verse 11 through 31, it tells if a man suspects his wife is being pregnant by another man, he's supposed to take his wife to the high priest. The high priest will make a concoction with sawdust and give it to her. If she's pregnant, it'll kill the fetus. If she's not, it'll make her sterile. And then if she's not, there's no penalty to the husband on his suspicion if he's wrong.
Right, of course.
And then
it's male. It's a patriarchy.
Right. And then also, the God of the Bible, he's a conditional, genocidal God. Over and over, he tells if you come upon a village, and if they don't convert...
Kill them all.
And kill all the males and keep the women and children.
Yeah. Hey, just read the book of Joshua. I mean, that's all you have to do. It's story after story after story of Joshua's exploits killing people because God told him to. Michael, thank you for the call. Excellent points all. We'll be back with Bill Keller, of all people.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.
Thank you. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 6 minutes past the hour. Over the last few weeks, we've seen, mostly the last 7-8 days, we've seen a number of Republican candidates ask the question, would you attend a gay wedding? And we're getting this whole wide variety of answers from no, Rick Santorum, to, well, I did attend a gay wedding reception, but I didn't go to the wedding. I think that was Scott Walker. To, yeah, I've been to one from, I forget which Republican said that, but basically it's, you know, they're all over the map. And Bill Keller of Live Prayer, the founder of liveprayer.com, says, this is the new gotcha question. Hey, Bill, welcome back to the program.
Tom, always good to be with you. How you doing, my friend?
Fine, thank you. You wrote a note saying, essentially, the agenda of the media seems to be to try to expose Republican candidates as bigots and homophobes. That's been in dozens of the media and the public debates on the gay marriage issue. And you say this is a foolish question. Isn't it,
really just
a way of saying to Republicans, are you going to continue your bigotry? And the larger question here, I think, is the Republican Party basically has three kinds of people in it. It's got the rich people who run it, because the Republican Party is a machine about money, period.
Yeah, like Soros and Steyer and the Wall Street money goes to the Democrats.
At the end of the day, the Republican Party is all about money. You cannot.
And so's Obama.
No, you cannot name any legislation.
The hedge funds and the Hollywood people that put Obama in, are you?
You cannot name any legislation that Republicans have promoted in the last 100 years that specifically benefits the middle class, working class people. I can give you a long list of things Democrats have done. I can give you a long list of things Republicans have done for billionaires.
I just know where Obama and Hillary's
like they just gave, you know, they just passed the largest tax cut in decades for billionaires 2 days ago, the Republicans in Congress, but not for the average person. But my point is that in order to get average people to vote for Republicans, they got to bring in the suckers, because the Republicans are always going to be behaving in ways that screw the average person. And so part of the roundup of the suckers is getting people like you to bring in the people who hate or are afraid of gay people. And
that has nothing to do with hating gay. What why is taking a stand for traditional marriage hating anybody? We just happen to believe that marriage is between a man and a woman. It's funny, Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton used to feel that way too, until they had to pander to the homosexual voting bloc to get votes.
Right. And at one point in this country, the people who were opposed to people of different races getting married, miscegenation, they didn't actually hate people of color.
People
they just didn't think that they should marry white
they
people,
had no
right?
choice over, and people who choose to engage in perverted, unnatural, unhealthy sex acts, Tom.
So the people who opposed miscegenation, the people who opposed people of different races marrying each other.
They were totally wrong.
Okay, then why are you not?
Because you're talking about a person doesn't have any control over the color of the skin they're born with. Just because a person chooses to engage in perverted sex with people of the same sex doesn't give them any kind of special rights. And it certainly doesn't allow anybody to redefine God's definition of marriage, which is a man and a woman.
Well, that's your God's definition
of
marriage.
Well, let me ask you
Bill.
A question, Tom. Would
no,
you
no,
attend
I,
the,
I'm
Tom,
saying
Tom,
you can,
you
can,
question.
You can discriminate in your church. All you
Tom,
want. The law is very clear on that,
Tom,
and I think it's a reasonable thing.
Question.
If you don't want gay people in your church, fine, put up a sign.
Love to have gay people in our church, because it's a bondage that needs to be delivered, just like an alcoholic and a drug addict.
Actually, I don't think that you should be able to put up a sign that says no gay people in this church. I take that
no,
back.
No, we
but,
love to have
but
gay
if you
people,
don't want
so
to marry
them,
somebody.
Just like we help alcoholics and drug addicts and gamblers, Tom.
Oh,
Tom,
man.
Can I ask you one question?
Gay people are not like alcoholics and gamblers and drug addicts, Bill, and you know
it's a bondage, Tom. It's a bondage. Can I ask you one question? Just one. If you had a family member that was going to marry a male family member, wanting to get married to three men, three women, a horse, and a tuba, would you attend that wedding?
Bill, it's a stupid question.
No, it's not.
It's an absolutely
stupid
question.
So you're
because
a bigot against somebody that wants to marry
we're discussing
people
how you and your friends who are on the, we're afraid of gay people or we hate gay people
we're
or whatever it may be.
Gay people,
we don't like gay people. We don't like what gay people do. You can, however you want to characterize yourself. I'm suggesting that you and your friends are part of the shill machine that helps bring people in to vote for Republicans. And the Republicans don't really give a damn about your gay agenda.
Find freedom.
Now, Bill, hey, Tom, let me finish a sentence once in a while, would you?
The result of a gay relationship?
Bill, wait a second. Let me finish a sentence here. The Republicans are using you, Bill. Now, maybe you're using them too. Maybe you're using them too.
I help people.
There's no doubt in my mind, in fact, that you're using them too.
From their bondages.
This isn't Fox News, Bill. Nobody can hear us when we shout over each other. I mean, we really, you know.
Fox News doesn't like me either because they don't like Jesus talk on there, if you didn't know that.
No, I didn't know that. But
they don't.
You know, notwithstanding Bill O'Reilly's war on Christmas and Christianity. But I just want to make this point very clearly because I don't think that you get it. What I'm suggesting is that the Republican Party, which is all about money, it's all about money for rich people. The Republican Party exists to serve the billionaire class, period.
George Soros, the hedge fund managers. Yeah, okay, go ahead.
Yeah. George Soros does not give money to the Democratic Party. Hasn't for 8 years. He's not involved in politics. Hasn't been for
Tom
quite a
Steyer.
While. And when he was, you know, it was, yeah, Tom Steyer. He gave as much money in the last election cycle as the Kochs probably do in a week.
Okay, so good. It's equal then. I got you.
No,
go
it's
ahead.
Not. It's not even close to equal. But the point is, the Republican Party exists for the benefit of the billionaires, and they have to bring the suckers in to vote for them, and so they reach out to people like you. Do you really think that the Republican Party is ever going to ban gay marriage in the United States, Bill? Or
you know
are they playing you at the same way
the
that they're playing their
Party
sucker
does,
voters?
But I do care about what this culture does in destroying the foundation of our culture, which is marriage and the family. In case you don't understand this, you
I'm all in favor of marriage and a family, Bill. You're the one who's opposed to
marriage
and a family.
Gay marriage being a part of that, my
you,
friend.
You are the one who is opposed to marriage and a family. You don't want gay people
no,
to get married or have a family.
No,
how is that not opposition
to
marriage?
I support God's plan for marriage and the family, which
your
is
God.
One man, one woman, for
in
one
your
lifetime.
Opinion.
That's marriage.
In your opinion?
No, in God's opinion, Tommy.
No.
You can't redefine what God says.
Where,
like
where
I said,
did Jesus
say
that?
Three men,
please,
three
Bill,
women in a tomb.
Please,
you
Bill,
do
give
that.
Me the give me the biblical verse where Jesus said that gay people should not get married.
He talked over and over about marriage, and it was always biblical
what
marriage
verse?
Between a man and a woman.
What is the verse?
There is no verse.
Of course,
because
Jesus never said that.
Gay marriage, but he
so
talked
you're
about,
saying
Tom,
that your God
Tom,
said that.
This. He talked
I mean,
about marriage many times, and it was always
you
biblical
can have a,
marriage.
You can have
God,
it one of
Jesus
two ways,
never
Bill. You can,
that.
Either, you can either say that your God is Jesus, and you can quote him, or you can quote the God of the Old Testament. And if you're going to quote the God of the Old Testament, you got to quote him in context. Because the God of the Old Testament didn't like homosexuality, but he also said that you should be stoned to death if you eat shellfish. Or if you wear clothing made out of two different kinds
law,
of fabric.
Which we're no longer under, Tom. That's a long, old, tired tactic. And Jesus, homosexuality is called a sin, not just in the Old Testament, in the New Testament as well. Jesus told the woman at the well, go and sin no more. He didn't say go and continue to commit
but
adultery.
But he didn't say go and have no more gay marriage. He did not say that, Bill.
Because it's understood that homosexuality is a sin all throughout the Bible, old
no.
and new, Tom.
Well, what about the comment that Jesus made about it? Some men are born eunuchs, some men are made eunuchs, and some men choose to be eunuchs? Don't you think
a
that he was talking about gays?
A eunuch has nothing to do with somebody choosing to engage in perverted, unnatural,
except people
sex
were not choosing back then to have their testicles removed. This was not about castration. I believe he was talking about gay people.
Well, you can believe that all you want, but that's not what a eunuch was.
See,
in the
I think that
Jesus
accepted
forced,
gay people.
It was a force.
Especially the disciple John, who loved to lay his head on Jesus' chest.
Come on, Tom. John was no more a homosexual than you are, my friend. God bless you, Tom.
Okay, Bill Keller, liveprayer.com. Thank you, Bill.
Always
and good luck. Keep, you know, well, I was going to say keep it up, but I really wouldn't suggest that. Anyhow, thanks a lot, Bill.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We'll be back 15 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And, there it is. Da-da-da. The old call screen software thing. Carol in San Diego, California, watching Free Speech TV on the DirecTV satellite. Hey, Carol, what's up?
I love your program.
Thank you.
I just think you do so much. It's great. Thank you so much for what you do.
My pleasure.
I want to encourage people to not refer to this right wing as conservatives. There's nothing conservative about them. And I've always felt the right, they're good at messaging. They're better at their messaging than the left.
Right. Well, they have to be because their existence depends on bringing in the suckers. Their existence as a political party depends on lying to people and having people believe those lies.
What I mean is that we, on the left, we don't need to refer to them as being conservative.
Right.
Yeah, at all. And it was just like global warming. People say, oh, I'd like it to be warmer, you know, and that got changed finally to climate change.
Right.
Pro-life. It's anti-abortion.
Right.
And Fox, I no longer ever refer to it as a news program. I refer to it just as the Fox program.
Right. I call it Fox so-called news. I mean, it's
so-called news, yeah.
Let's call them out for what they're pretending to be. I mean, they're pretending to be news when they're not.
So. Right. So I'll just call them the Fox program.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, Carol, thanks for the call. Fascinating points. Don, watching Free Speech TV in Lakeport, California. Hey, Don, what's up?
Not much. Before I get on to my question, on your gentleman who talked about perverted sex, when I was married to a woman, does oral sex make me perverted?
I think so, yeah.
Oh, okay.
That's defined as sodomy in the Bible, and therefore you are a sodomite.
Get ready to burn
in hell.
Oh, yeah. Should. Okay. On last night on Matthews, and our president said that 95% of our sales need to be overseas. If we are, and we are, 43% of the world's goods, we buy 43% of the world's goods, and it's, I think, second place is like 12%. Where does he get that we need to sell 95% overseas when we purchase most of this, you know, ourselves? Why do we need to have? Why not just put tariffs on all this stuff?
I agree. I so wish that this president would read my book, at least the first chapter in the introduction of my book, Rebooting the American Dream, which he can read online for free over at truthout.org. The entire book. We put the entire book up for free. This is the book that Senator Sanders gave to all 99 other senators. This is the book that one of our guests yesterday gave to Martin O'Malley. Because I'm increasingly convinced that he just genuinely doesn't understand macroeconomics, at least as they have to do with trade. And
somebody's making him a sucker. I don't know. That's happening. From what I saw last night, I think he believes half of what he's saying, but he's kind of almost questioning it.
Yeah.
And the other thing, he always said that, you know, you've got to make me do this, you know, like the pipeline. Now he's not going to go along with it because we all pushed him for that.
Right.
But he doesn't seem to be backing down on this TPP, and I don't know why.
Yeah, I don't either. I wish I did. I would love to be a fly on the wall inside the White House when these conversations are being had. Don, thanks a lot for the call. Great to hear from you. We'll be right back. Tom Harbin here with you, 20 minutes past the hour. It's fascinating, you know, when you really start to deconstruct it. When you just stand as far back as possible and look at the largest picture you can see of American politics and the American economy, what you see is that since the introduction of Reaganism into the United States in 1981, with its lower tax rates for billionaires, its Swiss cheese tax code for corporations, its ability to stash money overseas for corporations, its change in executive compensation rules so that very wealthy people who own or run very, very large corporations can take mind-boggling amounts of pay so that Stephen J. Hemsley over at United Healthcare can become a billionaire, take over $1 billion as CEO of a health insurance company, of a bank that just pays claims, right? Reaganism brought us all of these things. And it's just been a complete disaster. And when you stand back and you look at the big picture of
of the political landscape in the United States, you see that Reaganism is just the 1981 version of Hardingism in 1920, when Warren Harding became president on a platform of privatize, you know, more business and government, less government and business, privatize and deregulate. And we have been privatizing to the point that much of our government just doesn't work anymore because there are so many private corporations involved. And then we've got a bunch of things like the U.S. Patriot Act. They're getting ready to renew the U.S. Patriot Act. They're going to maybe change its name. But they're definitely going to make sure that the NSA has billions of dollars to pass out. Why? Because the money gets passed out to private for-profit contractors. And those private for-profit contractors then take that money, some small portion of that money, and kick it back to the politicians. I went through the list on this a couple of days ago on this program. I think it was Monday I was reading. And that was just Jeb Bush in Florida, where, you know, the bundlers for his brother W's 2000 campaign, you know, they raise $100,000. Jeb Bush would give him $20 million in Florida contracts, or $20 million in pension funds to invest. They give $100,000. They bundle $100,000. Jeb Bush gives them 20, 30, 40 million bucks. They give hundreds of thousands or $1 million, and Jeb Bush gives them $100 million. I mean, it's just astonishing. The Republican Party is a money recycling machine, and their job is to recycle money from you and me and poor people into the pockets of very, very wealthy people, into the pockets of the top 1%, and in particular, the top 1/100th of 1%. The Democratic Party, on the other hand, for some time now, since the 30s, has been the party of working people in the United States, and aggressively the party of working people. Unfortunately, the Supreme Court has, with their Buckley decision in 1976, which is the first really consequential act that Lewis Powell got involved with after he wrote the Powell memo to his friend Eugene Sindor of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, saying, we've got to take over Congress, we've got to take over the courts, we've got to build think tanks, we've got to take over American public opinion, we've got to take over the media, we've got to put our people in the schools and teach our stuff. We've got to push back against Ralph Nader and Rachel Carlson. I mean, that's what started the whole thing. He cites it in the Powell memo, where he says that, you know, Unsafe at Any Speed by Ralph Nader and Silent Spring by Rachel Carlson, these two books have created consumer movements in the United States which are making it very difficult to conduct business in this country without harassment from government or from environmentalists. We need to take charge. And they have. They absolutely have. And so when you step back and look at that big picture, you get it that for the Republican Party, and for a small portion of the Democratic Party as well. Fortunately, so far, it's still a small portion. You can identify who the conservadems are. And I'm talking not so much about social policy or abortion or anything like that. I'm talking about money. Their policies. I mean, this is, you know, Ron Wyden, for example. He's generally a very good, relatively middle of the right. He's less progressive than Hillary Clinton was in the Senate, far less progressive. But he's still a pretty good senator. Until now. I mean, now he's co-sponsoring this TPA fast-track bill. Really? Oh, yeah, I managed to negotiate some transparency provisions in it. Oh, great. So we get to see how badly we're going to get screwed in the 20 minutes before the vote. Really? So the Senate's going to reconvene this afternoon at 4 o'clock. And this TPA, fast-track bill, will probably be dropped at 4 o'clock by Mitch McConnell. It'll be dropped on the floor of the Senate, maybe even voted on this afternoon. So if you have a concern about SHAFTA, the TPP, now is the time to call your senators. Unless you live in D.C. like I do, you have two senators. And if you call 202-225-3121, that's the congressional switchboard, 202-225-3121, you call that number, you can say, hey, I'm calling from Oklahoma. Who are my senators? They will tell you. And then you can say, well, please connect me to Mr. Inhofe's office, or Senator Inhofe's office. And they will. and then be polite and considerate and stay to one single issue. If you try to do too many things on a phone call, it doesn't work. But now is the time that we all need to be calling all of these guys. But this is pushing through the Senate right now. It's pushing through the House as well. And we need to tell the Democrats in the House no. And we need to tell the Republicans no. Fast track actually is Congress giving up their own authority to debate a law. I mean, can you get how astonishing this is? This is the nuclear option on steroids. The fast track authority is a nuclear option for the next 6 years that prevents Congress in the Senate, prevents any filibuster of any legislation that the president introduces that's called trade. No matter what it is, in fact, because the TPP has got a hell of a lot of things in it that have nothing to do with trade. All this harmonization nonsense. Back with your calls after this.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
News at the bottom of the hour. We'll be right back. Minutes before the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you and Ray in McHenry, Illinois. Hey, Ray, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. Are you there?
I am. What's up?
Okay. My answer to why Obama's acting the way he is regarding TPE is the Commercial Club of Chicago. I think they had a lot to do with his rise in politics, and I think they had a lot to do with him getting elected. And, you know, I say that because Rahm Emanuel, his first chief of staff, is a member of the CCC. Bill Daley was also a member. He was his second chief of staff. Penny Pritzker, who he nominated and was approved as the Secretary of Commerce, she's a longtime member of Chicago Commercial Club of Chicago. Mayor Daley before was a member of it, and Arnie Duncan was his CEO of Chicago Public Schools. He ends up being the Secretary of Education. So every time I look at all these people that Obama's working with or getting advice from, it always traces back to one place, and that's the Commercial Club of Chicago. And I think...
What is the Commercial Club of Chicago, Ray? What is it?
It's a private club in Chicago. It's 350 limited membership. You can look online, go to their website, Commercial Club of Chicago. It's 350 limited members. And they're all big CEOs and law firms and people with investment firms. And Bruce Rauner, the governor of Illinois, and his wife are both members.
Whoa.
And they've got an agenda. Two agendas they have. One is to get rid of unions, and the other is to get rid of pensions. And charter schools is the other thing. If you go to their website, they have this whole link that says New Schools for Chicago, and it's basically to turn all the public schools into charter schools.
Right.
Bruce Rauner just nominated for the superintendent of education for the state, is the former CEO of the Chicago International Charter Schools. So every time I keep tracing back some of these things, it always ends up having the same common denominator, and that's the Commercial Club of Chicago. And if you go on their website, you can actually look up their list of members. And every time I see something happen, like somebody gets nominated by Obama or something, I go look up and see if they're a member. And too often, they end up being a member of this club.
Hmm.
So it's like our version of, like a Chicago version of ALEC.
Yeah. That's amazing. And you think that President Obama might be supporting TPP because he was influenced by the kind of Chicago school, Milton Friedman ideology and thinking of the people in this club?
I think the people who helped him rise in politics, because he had a pretty meteoric rise in politics.
You're right.
I think they had a lot to do with that. And I think he trusts them, maybe even owes them a favor. And
yeah.
I think when they talk to him, he believes them. I think they've got his ear, and he thinks that they're giving him the straight dope. And when they tell him this is good for America, he's probably going to believe them. But
wow.
Every time I keep tracing these back, the common denominator is always the Commercial Club of Chicago.
That's fascinating, Ray. I had no idea. I had no idea. That's fascinating.
Yeah, well, just look it up online. Go check their member list out. And even the Chicago Public School, the board is appointed by the mayor. So.
Yeah.
Emanuel and all the people before him have always had at least three of the people on the Chicago Public School Board, have always been appointed from the Commercial Club of Chicago, and Pritzker was one of them.
Yeah.
And their goal is to get rid of public schools and turn it into charter schools.
I got it. You're getting redundant, but yeah, absolutely. I got it, yeah. Ray. I gotta learn more about this. Thanks for the heads up. I appreciate it. Bye now. Jane in Littleton, Colorado. Hey, Jane, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom. Second time I've called you in 10 years.
Thank you. How are you doing today?
I have stories for you. Huh?
How are you doing today?
I'm all right. You'll have to bear with me. I had a couple of surgeries, and my brain is not functioning as well, so I'd like to try to get through these couple of things. So I just want to tell you I'm a Democrat, a Democratic socialist who had a Run Bernie Run party back in February.
Cool.
And so I'm working, you know, in terms of that. But after Senator, I want to talk a little bit about Senator Gardenhire and how Tennessee Gardenhire and how he swore to a constituent who asked if Gardenhire would give up his Medicare. It was about six weeks ago, something like that.
This is a state senator?
Yeah. Senator, Tennessean Senator Gardenhire. And he told the constituent said, will you be willing to give up your Medicare since you won't pass expansion? He swore at the constituent. After that, I started to think. A little light bulb went off, and I thought, you know, and I called up Grayson and all the other, you know, progressives that I've donated and supported after the NSA story came out years ago. And I said, you know, I think it's time to really sponsor legislation. I know it won't get anywhere. They might kill it in committee, but it'll get press time, hopefully, to sponsor legislation to remove all reps from Medicare until they pass Medicare for All.
Yeah.
And really push it in, you know, your show and whatever, because I think once it becomes a thought, it becomes a reality eventually, and maybe it scares these blue dog Democrats and these Republicans that they're going to lose their health care insurance. So
that's a sweet idea, Jane. Here's why it won't work. But because of the Supreme Court's changes in our campaign finance laws, starting with the Buckley decision in 1976 and culminating with Citizens United in 2010, because of those changes, members of Congress don't have to worry about Medicare. When you leave Congress, if you're willing to sell yourself out, and it seems like most members of Congress are, you can get a job at a lobbying firm in this town for $1 million a year, easy. I mean, even an obscure member of Congress. So, and if you've been on a committee and you've done the appropriate thing, if you were on the banking committee, for example, and you made sure that, you know, nobody at Citibank ever went to jail, that kind of thing, then the banking, you know, they'll hire you, whichever committee you're on. You know, it's like Billy Towson, who shepherded through Medicare Part D on behalf of the pharmaceutical companies. He took a job at $2 million a year as the head of pharma, you know, as soon as that bill passed. In fact, he had to get special permission from the House of Representatives to resign from the House so that he could go become the head of the lobbying group.
Right.
So,
right. No, I get it. And actually, my father was one of the original lobbyists with a K Street. He's pretty famous, and he quit and cashed out and took a huge hit, but he refused to be part of it. He was one of the original lobbyists on K Street. So
wow.
Anyway, but I want to just quickly get to the others. So I called Wyden recently and removed my name and email as a donor and supporter because of his working, you know, willing to go along with this. And then I called Mitch McConnell today. Lady answered. I was very polite to her. I said, I'm not going to yell at you or be rude. She was very appreciative. And then I told her that I didn't care which party or who supports TPP, but that any politician that supports a law or policy that destroys our country or our sovereignty should be prosecuted for treason. And I would actually support prosecution. She asked for my name. I said, she said, can I get your name? I said, absolutely not. And then she hung up on me.
Wow.
So I just want people to know, you know, I think we should just push it. And even if they get their $20 million job from a, you know, from their buddies,
right,
it's just the appearance, the embarrassment, hopefully, that will get to them in terms of public scorn in terms of the Medicare issue. So that's all.
Yeah, I'm with you, Jane. Thank you very much for the call. This whole Obama thing is just baffling because he's been so science-based on most things, so practical and factual, and you know, you would think that the White House, if they really believed that this deal was a good thing, they would release the deal along with, you know, bullet points in the margins or something saying, here's how it helps you. I mean, this is like, you know, PR 101. But they can't do that because it's a stinky deal. Lance in Harvey, Louisiana. Hey, Lance, you wanted to get back to Alan West and our good, bad, ugly?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and I got a second thing after this real quick. It ain't going to take that long.
But Alan West
claims,
yeah, go ahead.
He claims he was about prayer for football.
Right.
Well, I got news for you. Every football team prays before the game. I just retired at 35 playing in the minor leagues around the country. We played before the game. If you notice the school he was talking about where they didn't do the prayer before the game, the team probably did it in the locker room. And the school is a publicly owned school. That's why you can't do it. Notre Dame does it. All the private schools do it. But they still say prayers. And there's stuff about no castrati, brain injuries were ever reported because we just finding out about them over the years.
Yeah.
I mean, best example I got is Steve Gleason of New Orleans Saints, the hero of the first of the game opened the dome. He's been having brain damage since he was a kid. Playing ball.
Yeah.
He's in a wheelchair now, talking to a computer.
Yeah, and this is like just horrific stuff. It's really horrific stuff. And Alan West, the former Republican congressman from Florida, comes out and says, well, we never had this when I was in school, and it was because we prayed before games. Yeah, good point, Lance. Thank you very much for calling and making it. Nancy in Oak Lawn, Illinois. Hey, Nancy, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Just a couple things real quick. First of all, I don't know why. Who were you speaking to before?
Bill Keller, if that's what you're talking about, the debate at the beginning of the hour. Yeah.
Thank you. You know, it just makes no sense because they will never convince your audience that we're wrong and we're never going to get through their thick skulls. Separation of church and state, why does no one ever say that? Because God has nothing to do with this, with people's rights to get married or to have the same rights as everybody else.
Secondly, I agree with you at a civil level, yes.
Right, because these religious freaks are always, you know, bringing up God. Well, like you said to him, that's the God he believes in.
Right.
So how does that have anything to do with making law for this country? This country is supposed to be secular, and no one ever says that.
Yeah,
I agree. Secondly, there was no opposition for the TPP or against the TPP for on Chris Matthews yesterday. I struggled through watching that because it was making me puke, but they had no one on that panel who was speaking out against it. And no one asked the president or anyone else why, if it's so good, why is it being fast-tracked?
Right.
They're trying to fast-track.
Yeah, why do you have to sneak it through or slide it, you know, lubricate Congress to get it through? Well, you know, if it's such a great deal, why can't you just let them negotiate or debate it and all that kind of thing? I'm with you, Nancy. It's but, you know, I mean, Chris, the show, it's part of the establishment. It's the system here. Thank you, Nancy.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
See, of all the things I've learned in the 5 years I've lived in this town, the number one thing I've learned is that there's an in-crowd and an out-crowd. And welcome back. Vince, watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV in LaGrange, Illinois. Hey, Vince, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Listen, thanks for having me again. Now, listen, I want to address this Reverend Bill Keller. First of all, we're all animals. You know, I don't care how they look at it. You know, we have intelligence, et cetera. But what separates us from the rest of the species out there? And something for Reverend Keller to maybe investigate. They've proven that animals are gay. You know, we start out in the womb, my understanding, as a female. He started as a female. Whatever type of chemicals or whatever transpires, you know, it happens. And I'd like to ask him this. Could he change? Could he change? In other words, if he has a wife, could he change?
Right.
Because gay people, and I'm not gay, but I understand them. And I understand, you know, that it's a part of our being and who we are. And why can't we accept everybody for what they are instead of this here discriminatory way of talking about them? The reason I called.
Yeah, it seems to me, Vince, that the anti-gay crowd has boiled down to basically two categories of people. Basic bigots, you know, just good old-fashioned, good old-boy yahoos or guys in suits, you know, whatever, who just are bigots, number one. And number two, bisexuals, people who are born bisexual, so they actually do have to make a choice which gender they're going to hang out with for the rest of their life if they're thinking about marriage, for example. And therefore, I think that such folks assume that everybody and bisexuality is quite rare. I mean, it's a very small subset of homosexuality or the sexual spectrum, shall we say. And these bisexual men, by and large, you know, anytime a man says to me, it's a choice to be with a man or a woman, it just tells me that that person is bisexual. If they actually believe that, they're basing that belief on their personal experience. And my response to them would be, and I've had this conversation with Bill Keller before, okay, then that's a choice for you because you must be bisexual. But it's not a choice for the rest of us. It's not a choice for gay people. It's not a choice for straight people. It's not a choice for transgender people. It's only a choice for bisexual people. And so I think that we've got these bisexuals and some closeted gays who are, you know, self-hating or whatever, you know, leading this anti-gay movement. And it's tragic to watch. It's just tragic. I mean, who else would wake up? Go ahead.
Yeah, sir. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you, Vince. I mean, just think about it for a minute. Who is going to wake up in the morning every day and say, okay, I'm going to go to work and my job is to think and talk about gay people all day? Who would do that who's not gay? Or who doesn't have some inclinations, right? In other words, who isn't bisexual? So I'm not saying that I have any knowledge whatsoever what Bill Keller's sexuality is. I don't want to personalize this to him. He's not here to defend himself. He's been on the program before, and I've right up front said, hey, you know, mostly the people who make the arguments that you're making are either repressed gays or bisexuals, and he basically took offense at my question. But, you know, who knows? So who knows? But generally speaking, I think that that's what you see out there. Anyhow, the news of Victoria Jones, the Talk Radio News Service, coming right up. Stick around. We'll be right back. It's 10 minutes before the hour. It is 10 minutes before the hour. Let's check in with the Talk Radio News Service. Talk Radio News brought to you by the story of Chalene and Kier, the slave from South Sudan. That would be Kier, not Chalene. Chalene is Ellen's partner. You can see it over at thanklist.com/watch. And Victoria Jones with the Talk Radio News Service is on the line with us. Hey, Victoria. Oh, hang on. Say it again. Hello, Victoria.
Hey,
there you go. It's the magic electrons. So what's going on in the world today, Victoria?
It is the 45th birthday today.
45th?
Yes.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay, so what's happening
going
with regard to that?
Well,
yeah.
Well, some Earth Day news. President Obama is planning to highlight the effects of climate change on national parks on a trip today to the Everglades in Florida. He's going to focus not just on destruction that he says is warming the planet and that it's already bringing to parks, but also on the economic impacts that come from the changes to parks. He's going to touch on the public health and national security problems that he's recently highlighted as results of climate change. He's also going to talk about the efforts that he's taken and proposed to cut greenhouse gas emissions that warm the planet. So he's going to be in Florida, the backyard of Senator Marco Rubio, who's running for president, and former Governor Jeb Bush, who's thinking of running for president. And, of course, Governor Rick Scott, who has not allowed his administration to use the words climate change, although he denies that.
Yeah, I think it's so deliciously ironic that Obama's going to go to Florida to talk about Earth Day.
I don't think it's accidental.
No.
No. And Governor Rick Scott was asked to meet the president on the tarmac and declined.
Oh, my.
Well, a pair of Democratic House lawmakers today introduced a bill to ban hydraulic fracturing for oil and natural gas, commonly known as fracking, on federal land.
Mm-hmm.
Representatives Mark Pocan, Democrat of Wisconsin, and Jan Schakowsky of Illinois touted the measure as the strongest anti-fracking bill ever introduced. It would cover national parks, Bureau of Land Management property, national forest wilderness areas, and other lands under federal jurisdiction.
But given the fact that the Republican Party is entirely shills for billionaires, and some of the most politically active billionaires in the United States are fossil fuel billionaires, specifically the Koch brothers, and, well, there's a bunch of them, This doesn't have much of a chance to get through Congress, does it?
Not a lot. They also introduced a similar bill at the end of 2014. Right. So they will keep hammering.
Good. Good on Jan Schakowsky and Mark Pocan are two of the very finest people in the U.S. House of Representatives. Good on them.
Well, there you go. Also, Oklahoma officials this week say that the state's recent surge in earthquakes is likely the result of water disposal wells associated with oil drilling. The Oklahoma Geological Survey saying that they're very unlikely, these earthquakes, to be naturally occurring, and that the primary suspected sources of triggered seismicity is not from hydraulic fracking, but from the injection disposal of water associated with oil and gas production.
Right. And that would be because when they do the fracking, they're puncturing soft earth. They're puncturing shale. And that's not going to transmit seismic changes up to the surface. But when they dispose of the waste, they're not putting it into these shale formations. They're putting it wherever the heck they can get it. In many cases, they're having to crack rock to get it in there.
They've seen an increase of more than 2 magnitude 3 earthquakes a week since 2013. Right. Before then, they were occurring at a rate of about 1.5 per year.
Right.
Which is astonishing.
It is.
Conservative Republicans, the only political group that believes the effects of global warming will not happen during their lifetime, right, according to a new Gallup poll.
Yeah, I opened the show with that. That was pretty astonishing. It really speaks to the power of the shills to bring in the suckers, you know, to bring in the rubes. It's just amazing. The fossil fuel industry, Fox News, right-wing hate radio, they have done such a good job of indoctrinating this small subsection of America. It's really rather tragic. Anyway, back to you.
Yeah. I thought I'd give you an intermission story.
Okay.
From Scotland.
Okay.
Delays were caused on a busy stretch of the M74 motorway, which is a major freeway in Scotland, after reports of a dog taking control of a tractor. The incident was highlighted on Twitter by Traffic Scotland. Yes, it took place in Abingdon, South Lanarkshire. A sheepdog called Don, owned by farmer Tom Hamilton, leaned on the controls of his utility vehicle, taking it onto the road, and straight into the median strip in the middle.
Whoa.
The farmer had left his collie sheepdog, Don, sitting in the passenger seat while he went to check on lambs. And Don took control of the SUV, and off we went.
So the dog,
Don was unharmed.
Amazing. The dog took their car for a ride.
Yes.
Okay, thank you for that.
Senator Elizabeth Warren today fired back at President Obama over remarks he made yesterday about her position on trade, where he said, "I love Elizabeth. We're allies on a whole host of issues, but she's wrong on this." Today, Warren responded via Twitter, "The Obama admin says I'm wrong. We shouldn't worry about TPP. So why can't the American people read the deal?"
Exactly. I mean, of all the things, of all the evidence that this is a stinky deal, that's at the top of the list.
Well, the administration would say that, generally speaking, with these international deals, you can't read them, and it's to protect the sensitivity of the negotiations.
Right, but the negotiations are over, so let's see the deal.
Senator Bernie Sanders, independent of Vermont, tried today to block the Finance Committee from being able to consider the fast-track trade bill. He objected to unanimous consent request from Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, so he's forced a delay in the consideration of the legislation. He hasn't stopped it, but he's ticked them off, basically. McConnell's saying the committee will simply be inconvenienced by the current actions of the senator from Vermont.
Fascinating. Fascinating. Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Thank you, Victoria.
Thank you, Tom.
Brought to you by the story of Sholene and Kira, the slave from South Sudan. You can see it over at thankless.com/watch. We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program.
The Tom Hartman Program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. 6 minutes past the hour. It's Earth Day. Germany is getting, on these nice summer days now, as much as 50% of their electricity from solar power, since they have a very innovative program that puts solar panels on about half of all German households. In Hawaii, in the United States, it's pushing 15% of households. This stuff is coming to scale. Wind power now, and it represents 20% of the total electricity contribution in Iowa and Texas, of all places. It's growing. These technologies are solid, they're economical, and when you consider the subsidies that we give to the fossil fuel industry, if you were to remove those subsidies, they're cheaper than oil, coal, or natural gas. So why would anybody be pitching the fossil fuels of the 19th and 20th centuries? Mark J. Perry, a scholar with the American Enterprise Institute, AEI, professor of economics and finance at the University of Michigan on the Flint campus and creator and editor of the economics blog Carpe Diem, is with us, AEI.org, of course, the website. Mark, welcome.
Yeah, hi, Tom.
So, I read your love note to fossil fuels. Why? Why should we be embracing the energy source of previous centuries, particularly when those energy sources produce waste materials that cause cancer, that kill us, that cause asthma, that make our lives miserable, when we've got new clean technologies that could create all kinds of jobs and could power the world?
Yeah, well, it's just that the new renewable energies just still, on a scientific and economic basis, just really aren't viable compared to fossil fuels.
Tell that to the Germans.
I was using in the blog post that I think you read. I was using the Department of Energy's forecast out to the year 2040. So based on the Energy Department, you know, the government's forecast, they're predicting that even, 25 years from now in the year 2040, that we're going to rely on fossil fuels for more than 81% of our energy sources, and renewables are going to be less than 10%.
So. Yeah, that assumes nothing changes. I mean, we have this country can do amazing things when we decide to. Look at how we mobilized to fight World War II. We could flip our. There is enough solar power landing on the United States in one day to easily power every home and business in this country for a year if we simply could efficiently catch it. And well, the efficiency of these things is up to the point where, as I said, it's less expensive than fossil fuels. Why don't we stop subsidizing the oil barons and foreign countries that hate us and start subsidizing jobs in the United States?
Well, I think that's a little bit of some misinformation, that the oil and gas companies do not get any direct subsidies. They get some tax breaks that other manufacturers get, but
don't protect the shipping lanes from Saudi Arabia to here?
Well, sure.
We do that with our tax dollars, hundreds of billions of dollars in our Navy and Air Force. With the oil depletion allowance is still there as for every gallon of oil that they can pump out or barrel that they can take a little more money. We're selling oil. We from public lands, we're selling oil for like pennies on the barrel to oil companies that are turning around and selling it for $50 a barrel. We're subsidizing oil companies in 16 ways to Sunday, Mark.
Yeah, but it's not like the direct taxpayer subsidies that, you know, solar companies have gotten in terms of loan guarantees and direct
subsidies. Well, there's huge subsidies in as much as we are not captured. We're not, the fossil fuel industry is the only industry in the world. Correct me if I'm wrong. If you can come up with another alternative, I'd love to hear it. But as far as I know, it's the only industry in the world that does not pay to dispose of its waste. When power plants burn coal, and all that waste goes into the air, and some of it is very poisonous and toxic, and much of it is carbon dioxide, which is poisonous and toxic to our environment, to our atmosphere. They are not paying for that. They're not paying for the cost of the cancers, the estimated 10 to 50,000 cancers in the United States every year as a consequence of people inhaling the results of fossil fuel combustion. They're not paying for the cost of our protecting, you know, fighting wars abroad to protect oil sources, oil resources in the Middle East. They're not paying for any of that stuff. If they had to pay for that, the price of oil would be out of sight in the United States. If we simply made fossil fuels cost what they're actually costing us.
Well, yes, but it's just that, I mean,
so why don't we do that?
Energies are very, very expensive as well and can't really survive on their own without a huge amount of, you know, taxpayer life support.
That's no longer true.
I'm showing.
Mark, you know, that might have been the case 15 or 20 years ago, but that's no longer true. In the country of Germany, Denmark, I mean, Hawaii, it's all over. You've got for-profit power companies in Hawaii trying to stop Hawaiians from putting panels on their roof, charging them, you know, $100 a month if they put solar panels on their roof. Why would they do that?
Yeah, but I mean, also we have to recognize that because of the switch from coal to natural gas, that our CO2 emissions on a per capita basis are really the lowest since the 1960s. So we get some benefits from the fossil fuel industry by providing cheap, abundant natural gas to replace coal, which has brought carbon dioxide emissions down. So there's that environmental benefit that I think we have to recognize.
And I'll acknowledge that. But on the other hand, the natural gas companies are not, again, they're internalizing profits and externalizing costs. They're not, you know, Oklahoma, three or four earthquakes every single day. The natural gas companies are not making people whole when their houses get damaged. These fracking wastes that are reinjected into these fracking wells all over the country, people are not being compensated when their well water goes bad. The coal industry in West Virginia, the stuff that they use to clean the coal that smells like licorice, and I forgot the name of it, that contaminated that river, and 300,000 people had no water for, you know, and even now their bodies are filled with stuff that may well cause cancer or birth defects. The coal company's not paying for that. We need to be capturing these expenses that they are dumping on us.
Yeah, I mean, well, there's a cost to any kind of energy production. I mean, the wind energy, for example, is very, very land intensive, and so is solar. And wind farms kill a lot of birds. There's environmental damage in that sense. So, I mean, there's always going to be a cost to society.
Skyscrapers kill birds. Actually, skyscrapers in the United States kill a lot more birds than wind power, number one. Number two, they're coming up with wind power designs that don't kill birds, that, you know, from these new scalloped blades that are actually 37% more efficient because they mimic a humpback whale's flippers, but to things that have little whistles in them that discourage birds. I mean, that was a concern 15 years ago. It pretty much isn't anymore.
Well, I just think people have to, you know, be prepared for the fact that according to the government's own forecast, that for the next quarter century, fossil fuels are going to continue to provide the large majority of our energy.
If we do nothing.
Our economy and fuel our homes or heat our homes and fuel our vehicles.
Right,
and
if we do nothing.
They're going to continue to play a very, very small and minor role in energy in the U.S.
If we do nothing. If, on the other hand, we were to do what Germany did, which didn't cost the government anything, by the way, and put solar panels on a third of the houses in the country, we could probably pretty much eliminate our need for most non-transportation fossil fuels.
Yeah, I mean, well, if we can get solar and wind scalable and so that they're cost-effective relative to other types and sources of energy,
they are. They are.
Okay, but then it seems like the government is forecasting that they're going to continue to provide less than 10%.
That's because they're assuming that Republicans are going to continue to obstruct any attempt to promote clean energy.
Well, I mean, they make a lot of assumptions in their models, but I'm just saying.
I think that's a reasonable assumption, don't you?
Well, I mean, these are the government's own. This is Obama's energy department.
Yeah, and they're looking at, you know, the Republicans have blocked every effort to subsidize solar or wind or promote it in any way, or for that matter, to recapture the external costs to fossil fuels. I mean, there's been a number of pieces of legislation to do one or the other or both, and the Republicans filibuster them in the Senate, fight them in the House, fight them at the state level. Anyway,
yeah, Mark? Well, I mean, I think the future looks bright, and I think fossil fuels are part of that, and I think people should be ready to accept that, and I think we'll continue to get the majority of our fuel from low-cost sources like coal and oil and natural gas.
Okay, Mark, the last word is yours. Mark Perry, Mark J. Perry, scholar at AAEI. AEI.org is the website. Mark, thanks for dropping by.
Thanks, Tom.
Good talking.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
15 minutes past the hour, we will be back with your calls, my thoughts, and the news of the day. Call your senator now about TPP. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, 15 minutes past the hour. And Paul, in South Lyon, Michigan, you disagree with me about NAFTA?
Yeah, Tom. The president knows more about economics and trade than all his critics put together.
I don't think so.
And the fact that he got us out of the financial crisis and depression that the Republicans put us in and created 12 million jobs in spite of the Republicans being in the way proves it. And Elizabeth Warren is wrong again today. The TPP will be made public 2 months before it's voted on. The president said that yesterday. But anyway, it's easy for so-called progressives like Public Citizen to take figures out of context. But the overall economic record proves NAFTA was not a bad thing. For 7 years after NAFTA went into effect, under President Clinton, we had the best economy in history. 23 million jobs created, government surpluses, and rising wages.
It was a dot-com bubble.
What's that?
That was the dot-com bubble. That had nothing to do with NAFTA.
There was no dot-com bubble, Tom. There was a few stocks that had a minor
There was no dot-com bubble.
I was every day in the stock market. That's a Republican talking point. I know you don't give Bill Clinton credit for the he deserves because it's Bill Clinton, but that's the fact.
I like Bill Clinton.
The best economy in history. Well, then why don't you give him credit for his accomplishments then?
I didn't know that I didn't. But this has nothing to do with that.
You always say 35 years of Reaganomics, and every time I point out Bill Clinton reversed Reaganomics for 8 years, and we had the best economy in history, which proves you're correct.
No, he didn't.
By the way, you never acknowledge it at all.
Yeah, because Reagan didn't reverse Reaganomics. Reagan's slightly reversed Reaganomics in as much as he raised taxes on rich people by what, 3%? 5%?
Right. Yeah,
it was very small.
You're right. He took the first step. But when your kids take the first step, do you say, hey, how come you're not running a marathon?
No, you
say, good job. You took the first step.
That's fine.
You know, I mean.
But you know, where are you getting your information about NAFTA?
Well, I believe it was a government website. I Googled it yesterday. And U.S. manufacturing actually rose 62% in the 13 years following NAFTA. And before NAFTA, it rose 42%. So, I mean, you can take figures to show anything, but you can't fake the actual economic record. We had the best economy in history for 7 years after NAFTA was passed, and it didn't get destroyed until Bush destroyed it with his trickle-down nonsense economics.
Yeah. Okay, Paul, it sounds like we're not going to convince each other. So what do you know about TPP that makes you support TPP?
Well, I don't know. I don't know everything about it yet, but I don't know why everyone's jumping to these conclusions, you know, taking a few things out of context.
Because WikiLeaks has published parts
exports.
Of it.
We need to increase exports. Right now, we already have zero tariffs, and that's not going to change as long as the Republicans are controlling Congress. So Obama's taken a bad situation. He's trying to make the best out of it by increasing exports, increasing standards in other countries. Everyone talks about Vietnam, they pay 56 cents an hour. Well, what if he can get them to raise that to a dollar an hour? That would certainly help American workers.
How?
How? Because it would no longer be economically.
So now you're competing with somebody who earns a dollar an hour instead of somebody who earns 52 cents an hour? Forget that $40 an hour manufacturing job or even the $20 an hour manufacturing job or even the $15 an hour manufacturing job. It's $7.25 for you, buddy.
Well, yeah, but you have to figure transportation costs into that too, Tom.
Yeah, well, that's why. I mean, $7.25 is still, you know, seven times more than a dollar an hour, more than. Anyhow, Paul, thank you for the call. Thank you for the respectful call. I appreciate it. We'll be back. past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you and Chuck in South Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Hey, Chuck. TPP?
Yeah, Tom. You know, the thing that bothers me a great deal about the TPP is kind of an unintended consequence, or possibly not so unintended. By reducing the benefits and pensions and things of workers, you're going to have older workers staying in jobs longer, average jobs, welders, carpenters, et cetera. This is going to reduce the opportunities for young high school graduates that can't afford college, that can't go to college, et cetera, et cetera. This is the problem that we had back in the Great Depression.
Right. And actually, we had tariffs during the Great Depression. So, but yeah, it's the eliminating pensions and benefits. This is just nasty stuff in this thing. Chuck, thank you for the call. Excellent point. Rick in Eureka, listening on KGOE. Hey, Rick, you wanted to talk back to Bill Keller?
Yes,
Rick?
Yes, I'm here.
You're on the air.
Yeah, I was listening to Mr. Keller's argument, and in the heat of battle, it's easy not to remember an important question. I think you could have gone a long way to establishing the weakness of his argument by simply asking him when he implied that gays engage in immoral activity, what he says to the to a married heterosexual couple engaging in the exact same sexual activity.
Right.
If he would condemn them too.
That's a good question. I'm now genuinely curious what his response would be. I'm guessing he would say that's none of our business.
Know.
They're married.
If he's screwed either way he goes.
Yeah. Maybe, yeah. Good pun, yeah. Okay, Rick, we'll try that next time around. Thanks a lot for the suggestion. Wayne in Chicago. Hey, Wayne, what's up?
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I am great. How are you today, Wayne?
Yeah, I want to talk about my two senators that I called. I called
Kirk
a few minutes ago. But the first thing I want to tell you is the so-called health experts who care so much for our children, they're at it again, Tom. They put a report out in the a Journal of the American Medical Association saying that there's no link whatsoever between the MMR vaccine and autism. So they're at it again, Tom.
Yeah. Well, there may not be a link. I mean, I'm perfectly willing to listen to the science. Even Bobby Kennedy's asserting
CDC,
that
the CDC whistleblower who worked for the CDC says that the CDC knew for the last 13 years that there is a link.
Right. Yeah,
so
that's the thing.
The point is moot. There's a link.
Yeah, and I'm wondering how much of this is disingenuous to begin with, because, you know, Bobby Kennedy and many of the people who are concerned about a link between vaccines and autism have repeatedly said, we're not talking about the vaccine. The vaccine is fine. We vaccinate our kids. It's a good thing. And if you get single-dose vaccines, there's no thimerosal in them. There's no mercury in them. But if you get a shot from a multi-dose vial, which is the cheap way to do it, which is what you're probably going to get in most hospitals or walk-in shops or whatever, you know, for your flu shot or whatever it may be. If you get a shot from a multi-dose vial, there's still mercury in many of them, and that's not a good thing. That's what they're saying. So I don't know. I haven't read the article in the Journal of American Medical Association.
Anyway, I called Senator Dick Durbin's office. I got a recording which sent me to voicemail.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't you say last week that was one of the tricks?
Well, that's what Republicans usually do. I'm saddened to hear that it's happening to with a Democrat. Although maybe he's just, you know, maybe their office is just overwhelmed with calls.
Anyway, I called my other senator, Mark Kirk's office.
Republican.
I actually got a live person on the phone.
Huh?
I asked him his position on fast-track legislation for the TPP. He said that Senator Kirk had not yet formed a position on that legislation, but he was taking comments, and he took my comment, and I thanked him for taking my comment.
Cool. That's good. Good on you, Wayne.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
so hopefully, you know, something will happen good. I just heard your... the lady say that Senator Sanders blocked something about the TPP just a minute ago?
Yeah, Victoria Jones is reporting, and it's over at Democratic Underground and other places, that Senator Sanders in committee blocked the fast-track bill. He's not able to actually stop it, but what he has done is he has apparently slowed it down for at least a day. We'll see.
Okay, one last thing I want to say. I don't understand why you're baffled about why the president is supporting this. They're drinking the Kool-Aid of the New World Order that George H.W. Bush was talking about.
Right.
And you have to bring down the wages and the living standards of the United States, the strongest economy, in order to be a part of the New World Order. So I don't understand why you're baffled about it.
Because call me a hopeless idealist, but the idea that President Obama is sitting around with these guys saying, yeah, let's just screw the average working guy, I don't see it. Am I just in denial, Wayne? Is that what's going on?
Yes, you are. They have to do it. They want a new world order.
Yeah. When
George H.W. Bush said that,
I know.
Every president since George H.W. Bush has been carrying it out to the letter, all of them.
Well, this will be SHAFTA. The TPP will be a new world order because it's going to change the way that intellectual property is handled. It's going to change the way banking is done. It's going to change so many things. And virtually all those changes are that it's being put in the power to decide how these things happen is going to be put in the hands of multinational and transnational corporations. Wayne, thank you for the call. And thanks for listening to WCPT. Always nice to hear from you. We'll be right back. It's 28 minutes after the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
Back with more calls after this. Call your senators now. 202-225-3121 for Congress. Minutes before the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Richard in driving through South Dakota, listening on Sirius. Hey, Richard, what's on your mind?
Hey, how you doing today, Tom?
Good, good. You called your California senators?
I did. I called Dianne Feinstein and Barbara Boxer's offices, and I'm happy to say I got live bodies on both numbers.
Great.
And what did they tell you? Unusual.
Yeah.
Basically, I didn't even ask the question of where they stood. You know, because to me that's kind of irrelevant right now. I think the more important thing when we call them is to push the point of where we stand.
Right.
Because we have the power to change their stance if we really, like, are adamant about the fact that we don't want this.
Yeah.
You know, and we stress to them that they are our public, you know, we vote them in. They're our public servants. They're supposed to work for our benefit.
Yeah.
You know, that's their jobs. That's what they swore to do. And, you know, the bottom line is we have got to make these people understand that we're not for this. You know, if you truly believe that this is a bad thing for America, make the point. You know, just tell them point blank. You know, I don't like it. You know, it's too much secrecy around it. You know, corporations have never done anything for working class people other than take our money. They don't have any... You know, there's no reason for a corporation to exist other than to turn a profit.
Yep.
And if corporations are driving this, it's all about how much money they can make, and it doesn't have anything to do with the public good.
I agree. And it's all about locking up profits with things like patent laws and copyright laws and basically creating what Jefferson referred to as monopolies. Patents and copyrights were called monopolies back in the day.
Yeah, and I also made the point, you know, I work for a living. I put in 12 to 16 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Whoa.
And the way that this economy is going, you know, they talk about all the money we're making as a country. I'll probably never be able to afford to retire at the rate that things are going. I'll literally be working the day I fall into the ground.
Wow.
And, you know, they've got corporate, you know, they got corporate people who, you know, get up and go to board meetings in the morning and spend all afternoon on a golf course. You know, they're off work by 3 or 4 in the afternoon, and they're going to retire when they're 50 or 60 with more money than they can ever spend.
Yeah, consider these statistics. This Mark Carlin wrote this over a BuzzFlash. He said, try and wrap your head around these two statistics. 6 people, the heirs of Walmart, have a passive net worth, the money they inherited through stock, equal to more than the bottom 40% of the people in the U.S., and it would take a Walmart employee working a 12-hour day 1 million years to earn what just one of those 6 Walmart heirs is worth. It would take 1 million years working at a 12-hour day at Walmart. Is that right? I mean, this is where I'm like, you know, bring back the estate tax in a big way and put it at 100% after $1 billion. But good on you, Richard, for calling your senators, and thanks for the. For your comments. Very, very thoughtful. Pete in West Henrietta, New York, listening on Net Roots Radio. Hey,
well,
Pete,
actually, it's Rochester. So,
oh, Rochester is good.
Yeah, a couple things. First, I want to extend a reminder and a thank you. April 28th is Workers' Memorial Day, and I want to thank you for acknowledging the 5,000 to 6,000 people that die on the job every year, the 50,000 to 60,000 that die every year from work-related injuries and disease, and the millions that are injured on the job.
Right.
Second, with regard to free trade, it is a mistake to calculate the number of lost jobs just since the passage of NAFTA. Free trade has been ongoing since the late 70s.
Right.
As someone who lives in Rochester, the home of Eastman Kodak, and many other manufacturing companies, one I worked for, which was a division of one of the big 3 automakers, I watched when I worked there in 77, 78, when I first started, they packed up one of the departments to ship it down to Juarez, Mexico, to the Maquiladora program.
Mm-hmm.
I had relatives and friends that worked for Kodak that were training people in Mexico to do their jobs.
Right. And on top of that, I mean, Kodak almost got put out of business by Fuji, you know, Fujifilm and others. Suddenly,
well,
becoming...
there's reasons why Kodak went down. Management is one, trade and other pressures are another.
Right.
There were a lot of other things, but yes, the idea that free trade only started after NAFTA was passed is a huge mistake.
Right.
And we need to find out the number of jobs that have been lost since the late 70s, because this started, right, like I said, 77, 78, when I first started working at Delta
Products.
Yeah,
it started with permanent normal trade relations. This was what Nixon's opening to China was established the basis, I believe, for this whole PNTR thing, permanent normal trade relations, which is how we're operating with China right now. And which basically means no tariffs and you know, we're treating you like Canada or something. And it's all screwed up. I spent November of 1986, or much of November of 1986, in Beijing studying acupuncture at the International Acupuncture Teaching Hospital there. And the entire city of Beijing, it was the third world. The air was, you know, kind of hazy because everybody heated with coal. There were no cars anywhere. You pretty much walked everywhere or took bicycles. Everybody rode bicycles. I stood in front of Tiananmen Square on that big, there's a big freeway there, 8-12 lane freeway, whatever it is. And maybe once every 5 minutes a car would go by. There were no skyscrapers. The tallest building in the city was the 12 story, I think it was a Hilton, it might have been a Hyatt, that had a pizza place in it and a steakhouse. And that was the high end of Beijing. Now, well, you know, since then, that was 86. Now that we've sent all our jobs over there, all the factories have gone there. Beijing is like this modern metropolis. It's mind-boggling.
If I'm not mistaken, there's still video clips. I remember seeing pictures and the stories that were coming back when I was still working there of the conditions that the people that were working in the plant were living in. They were using the cardboard boxes and the pallets to build shelters, and you had the pictures of the children playing in the streams of liquid that were coming from the plant, the chemicals that they were playing in.
Wow. That was down in Juarez.
This is 77-78.
Yeah.
So this is well before Bill Clinton signed NAFTA.
You're right. We didn't have to memorialize it or institutionalize it. It was already. You're right, Peter. What we're doing is
we're codifying the corporate coup d'etat in this country.
I agree.
By passing these trade agreements.
I agree. Yep. And the apotheosis of it. Thank you, Pete. And the peak of that was 1981 when Reagan was elected. James in Chicago. Hey, James, what's on your mind today?
Yeah, he pretty much said my point. We're codifying, we're securitizing, we're making it all into the oligarchs' favor for running corporations and executives and investors. So, you know, if you're an investor, yeah, you're gonna like think this is great because now it's out of the hands of the company or the countries. The people of the countries to decide the fate of what the rules are for them to operate in each and every country. And I don't see how they're trying to achieve parity of standards of living. If that has to do with the availability of raw materials and cost of finished products and location, and there's a lot of factors that go into how are you going to achieve parity with people making 56 cents an hour, you know, into this nation. I think that's just a pipe dream.
Yeah.
Of you know, without any protection, without any tariffs, without any control. The corporations are going to like make money for themselves. Right. I mean, look at the executive pay. Here's one point, a different point I'd like to make about taxes and regulations. They complain about taxes and regulations, but yet executive pay has gone up 300-400 times more in the last 40 years. So if taxes and regulations are so odious, why did all that executive pay, why did all that money funnel to the top so easily or readily?
Right.
They're not
all that odious. They just want to get rid of anything that might prevent them from being more profitable. Things like, you know, clean air laws.
They want tax breaks they want to take food programs away from people that need food programs so they can keep their tax break so they can put the new model Mercedes Benz in their garage.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. No, I'm with you. I'm absolutely. Yeah. Or another $1 million in their Swiss bank account. I'm with you, James. Thanks for the call. Rusty in Lorena, Texas. Rusty, we got 1 minute to the break. It's yours.
Hey.
Hey.
Tom Hartman off. Hey, man. Tom, I think you, I'm going to get to my main point first.
Please, because we just have a minute.
Stuff.
Go for it, Rusty.
So my main point is that I think you missed one maybe obvious solution.
Mm-hmm.
That all these surveillance programs they got going, that maybe they've got some dirt on Obama and they're blackmailing to do all this stuff.
So you think that the reason that Obama is supporting TPP and SHAFTA and Fast Track is because he's being blackmailed?
Yeah.
Huh.
I know it's black helicopter, Tom, but
yeah,
government, I mean, that's where my mind goes.
I just don't get it. I just genuinely don't get it. I'm genuinely baffled by this, and I think that this is lousy politics. Rusty, thank you for the call. I think this is lousy politics as well. I think it's going to hurt the president. I think it's going to hurt the entire Democratic Party. Now is not the time to be pushing this, in my opinion. Of course, I may be wrong. I mean, you know, I'm sure that there have been many things over the years I've been wrong on, but I don't think I'm wrong on this. We'll be back. It's 15 minutes, especially when Bernie's my validator, right? He's solid. 15 minutes before the hour.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Back with more of your calls and the news of the day right after this. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Bruce in Clinton, Maine, watching Free Speech TV on cable. Hey, Bruce, what's up? Bruce, you are on the air. Oh, I'm guessing Bruce is watching his TV or listening to his TV rather than his telephone. When you call in and you get put on hold, you need to listen to the phone, not the TV. At that point, you need to turn down your TV and just listen to the audio in the phone because there's about a minute delay between here and your TV set. Taylor in San Jose, California. Hey, Taylor. Can you hear me?
Hey, Tom.
Hey.
Yes, I can.
What's up?
Hey, my comment is on the big progressives who are seeming to be very, very, you know, almost do the bidding of the Republicans and talking anti-Hillary. I think this is an extension of far left frustration that the president hasn't been liberal enough that they expected. And I think they're extending it on and thinking, well, we had 8 years of not being progressive enough. Now we might have another eight. I think that there's two important things to remember for progressives that seemingly feel frustrated is one, if you want a progressive challenge to Hillary, Bernie Sanders puts out ads through Bold Progressives and such, and he asks if you will sign up and help him fight.
Right.
And he's going to need at least 3 to 5 million people to sign up before he even considers doing this.
Right.
Because he's going to go up against, you know, $2 billion.
Yep.
Secondly, if you don't think that Barack Obama would have been more progressive if he had more time with a more progressive Congress, and that's not been a factor in his presidency, the same thing will happen with Hillary. And progressives, if you're frustrated, you need to focus on the House and the Senate.
Right.
Most importantly, the House. I mean, the Senate, because the Senate is up. Is a lot easier to win than the House.
Yeah, there's a very good chance the Democrats are going to take the Senate in 2016, simply because there's twice as many Republican senators who are being challenged as Democrats.
Yeah, that's all I wanted to say is that if you're frustrated about there not being enough left, progressive support and progressive movement, remember that I think Elizabeth Warren is completely content with being in the Senate and feels that she can do plenty from there.
Yeah, I think she can. I absolutely think she can. Taylor, thank you for the call. Excellent, excellent thoughts. Mark in Montgomery, Illinois. You got a minute to the break, Mark. It's yours. Thanks for watching Free Speech.
Okay, my friend. Have you ever given any thought or consideration to the maybe an arcane problem of trying to reconcile the fact that the United States is still on the imperial system of measurement and the metric system, which is where most of the world is, and that we have a workforce that's not trained in metric yet, right, and the rest of the world that is being trained in metric, and then offshoring of American companies are being made, and I don't know if they can bring those jobs back here and how that's going to be reconciled with globalization, trying to reconcile those two systems. And that what they don't want to tell Americans is that we're going to have to be metric, and
yeah,
that's what's scaring them.
Yeah, and wasn't it during the Clinton administration that the big bugaboo that the Republican base was all hysterical about was that there was a conspiracy to shift America from the imperial system, from gallons and feet, to the metric system, to kilos and liters and stuff like that. They were all freaked out about it, and we almost joined the rest of the world, but ultimately we didn't because the troglodytes were all hysterical. Interesting, Mark. Interesting thought. I don't know how TPP will affect that. We'll do that. Defending America from the weapons of mass deception. Tom Hartman here with you, fair and only slightly unbalanced. Larry in Lancaster, California. Hey, Larry, what's on your mind?
Say, Larry?
Yes, sir. You're on the air.
Yeah. If NAFTA never passed, what do you think would it be as far as jobs, the economy, and...
Right. Well, as an earlier caller pointed out, NAFTA really wasn't the beginning of the deterioration of our trade position in the world. It really started in the 70s. I would say it started in the early 70s with Richard Nixon reaching out to China. But we started doing these bilateral agreements, these most favored nation status, and all these other things, with countries that are using principally VAT taxes as a replacement for tariffs. And we're the only country, I think we're the only developed country in the world that doesn't have a VAT tax. And so we have no mechanism to protect our domestic manufacturing, whereas Germany does, Japan does, Taiwan does, China does, all of the people whose stuff we buy. So I would say, Larry, in answer to your question, had we never started this free trade hysteria in the 70s, had we never started that, and thus had we never signed NAFTA and CAFTA, and now we're looking at SHAFTA,
I think, frankly, that we would still have manufacturing in this country. You'd have an, you know, you'd have an additional, well, we've lost 60,000 factories, just, I mean, factories, not jobs, factories, just since 2000. That's mind-boggling. There would be tens of thousands, maybe 100,000 more factories in the United States than there are right now. You would have lots and lots, which means literally millions of jobs. So our unemployment rate would be low. The middle class would be strong. It would, had we never gone down this trade route, and had, you know,
not Reagan, but...
yeah, I think we'd be in actually very good shape right now. Larry, thank you for the call. Blake in Tomball, Texas. Hey, Blake, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I was going to ask about TPP, and I know this is a stretch. I'm kind of an optimist like yourself, or an idealist, really. But I was wondering, what do you think of the chances of this being deemed unconstitutional if we had a progressive court as opposed to the court we have now? Because it's very similar to what Clinton was trying to do back in the 90s with line item voting, vetoing. It's the same thing. It's just a little bit different, but it's pretty much the same.
I would argue that TPP is a treaty. It's not a trade agreement, that there's no such thing as a trade agreement. You either make treaties with other countries that regulate your trade with them, or you don't. And the U.S. Constitution is very clear about that, that the president has the right to negotiate treaties, but they have to be passed with the advice and consent of the Senate with a two-thirds majority. So the TPP should not even be in the House of Representatives. It should be in the Senate, and it should take a supermajority to pass it. And, you know, with this enhanced trade authority or the PTA, their fast track, they're trying to get around that altogether and just make it a straight up or down vote with just a majority, a simple majority in the Senate. And so, A, I think it is unconstitutional. B, I believe if we had a genuinely progressive court, or maybe even this court, I mean, who knows? Sometimes conservatives will surprise you. But John Roberts has such a long record of always siding with corporations rather than individuals that I would be astonished if this court challenged it. And it's really kind of a sad commentary on the state of our democracy, Blake, when we have to hope or wish or dream that a Supreme Court would do what our legislators should be doing, which is basically the will of the people. Thanks for the call. That was a great question. Leroy in Stratford, Texas. Hey, Leroy, what's up?
Hey, how you doing, Tom?
Good. What's on your mind?
I always learn a lot from listening to you. But hey, question for you. If we didn't have trade agreements, no trade agreements, how will we enter into trade agreements with foreign countries?
Well, historically, I mean, literally from the George Washington administration in 1787, excuse me, from then until the mid-1970s, we had tariffs, and we identified the tariffs on by product. In fact, there's a list over at the Department of Commerce's website. You can see it right now. They've got a giant spreadsheet that you can download. There's still 22,000, I think, or more categories, product categories, manufactured product categories, like rolled steel, flat steel, you know, melted steel, bent steel, pig iron, you know, all kinds of categories. And every one had a different tariff rate. This one might be 22%. This one might be 45%. This one might be 11%. And we specified, we raised the tariffs as we considered those industries more and more vital to the United States. Like someday we may need this, you know, if we were at the World War II kind of scenario. And we lowered tariffs on things that we really had no interest in manufacturing in the United States, like carved sandalwood from Thailand, for example. Very, very low tariff rate. Now all those tariffs are down in the neighborhood of 1.5% or 2%. And so the way it works is the government establishes the tariffs, and then basically they collect tax whenever anybody imports anything into the United States at the border, the government collects the tax. And, in fact, I wrote a novel years ago. It was never published. And the MacGuffin of the novel was how – and this was an actual thing back in the 80s when I wrote this novel. It takes place in Germany – was how an American company selling things into Germany, you would send a bill of lading, an invoice along with the goods that you're shipping, that says these goods are worth, say, $1 million, when in fact they're worth $5 million. And then you only pay a German tariff on the $1 million, because Germany had tariffs too then. You would only pay a tariff on the $1 million, and then you figure out some back-channel way to deal with the other $4 million so it's tax-free. And a lot of that kind of fraud was going on before we dropped our tariffs down to 1 or 2%. Now we have less fraud, but we've got no tariffs. So the result of that is that anybody can import anything into this country, and there is no defense for American manufacturers. So it makes sense, Leroy?
Yes. So it seems like it's the enforcement of the agreement.
Well, it's not just the enforcement. It's setting those benchmarks, those points. Like I said, it used to be about a 30% average tariff on pretty much everything for 200 years. And now it's a 2% average tariff, and that's the problem. That's where it all went south. Leroy, thanks a lot for the call. Thank you all for listening today. We'll be back tomorrow. Until then, don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. You got to call your senators, 202-225-3121. Call them and let them know what you think about Fast Track and TPP. Either way, they need to hear from you. Tag, you're it. See you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.